Hi there, I'm Frank Rogorski. Glad to be here, although my remarks are going to be somewhat schizoidal compared to the thematic unity we just heard. I'm going to argue, first of all, I feel like I'm here representing the Washington establishment to a bunch of entrepreneurial West Coast people. And so there's a fear of imminent death, starting with that. But beyond that, I'm going to make an argument that the system is working now, that we have the right two people in the two most important jobs in Washington, that their names are Newt Gingrich and Bill Clinton, and challenge you to go another year or two before you will find anybody else who's willing to stand up and endorse both of them in the same speech. Now, how do I get here? Gingrich from 78 to 83 was both my mentor and my tormentor. It's funny how those two words link. There were five great years, and I wouldn't go through them again for anything. Clinton, on the other hand, I've never worked for him. I don't know him like perhaps Morley does, but I voted for him in 92. I will probably vote for him again in 96, even though I'm still a registered Republican, because it was important for the Democrats to have a president, to run foreign policy, and to balance the two-party system after 25 years of having nobody but Carter. It was important for the system to have a Democratic president. And in the process, Republicans also got rid of Bush, so there was some self-interest. Okay, I'm going to argue on two levels. One is a psychological intellectual level, and I'm going to make the case that Newt and Bill, or Gingrich and Clinton, are peas in a pod, so close that they can't stand it, and that one of them doesn't fully recognize it. At another level, though, they're rivals. They're like scorpions in a bottle. Same space, and yes, I'm trying to find biological metaphors here. They're leaders of partisan rivals, and they're also leaders of institutional rivals, President, Congress, Democrats, and Republicans. So you've got constant conflict going at the same time at a psychological intellectual level. You've got sort of a symbiosis going. This provides endless tension and fireworks and miscues to people watching these two and to political people who think they know everything they need to know about these people. But the result, in a kind of strange yin-yang way, is a de facto partnership that I predict, will carry us through to the year 2000 and will deliver most of the goods that probably most of the people at this conference want. There's one exception to this happy scenario, and I will quote from Michael on page 206 of the paperback. He has a section about murderous sibling rivalry. Here's the paragraph. Quote, for the young of many species, predation by brothers, sisters, and parents represents a far more serious threat than this consumption by the more typical predators. And when you have species going for the same food supply or the same spot in the nest or the same ecological niche, you get fratricide. The danger, the threat to my scenario, is that if Newt Gingrich in 6 or 8 weeks decides that he wants to be president, you then have a death struggle for the job of president rather than a division of labor the way you've got now with the speaker and the president. All the old-time Gingrich people, I shouldn't say all, but most of them don't want this to happen. Newt is where he needs to be, it's where he's trained to be, and I personally hope that he stays there. Now, Newt hates to be compared to Clinton, so I'm glad this is not being videotaped. But he was asked about a year ago, what do you have in common with Clinton? I mean, you're both from the South, you're both baby boomers. Will you tell us something you think you have in common with Clinton? And he, in that way of his, said, oh, well, we both talk too much and we both drive 67 Mustangs. And that was it. But in fact, there are a lot more overlaps, and with a few exceptions, Al Hunt is one, Mark Shields is another. They've not been laid out the way I want to lay them out for you. And this is a mix of all sorts of things. Number one, they both were raised with a strong maternal figure, and they had cold and distant stepfathers. It was even worse in Clinton's case because his stepdad was abusive. Number two, they are thoroughly unbalanced individuals, like most entrepreneurs. They have endless energy, and one of the reasons for this is because of the previous reason I just said. They have to earn their place at the table. They were never good enough for their stepfather, so nothing they do is ever quite good enough for themselves, and they endlessly try and they endlessly innovate and they survive. And that's a very important, gut force that's moving with the two of them. They differ in that regard from Al Gore, who was sometimes put in the same group with Clinton and Newt, because Gore was raised to be great. He was raised by a father who was a senator. He was sent to prep schools. He was told that he was going to save the world and do other great things. Newt and Bill were not raised like that. And so they have much more to prove every day of their lives. Comparison three, Their whole lives have been spent as what Irving Kristol called the new class back in 71, law, academia, and of course elected office. Law and academia are the two places in this society where articulation counts. And so it is perfectly logical that Newt and Bill would if to the extent they weren't in office, would have done those things before that. Four, you've seen the picture of Clinton shaking President Kennedy's hands back in June 1963 and how he sort of connived to get at the head of the boys group that did that. There's a similar story with Newt. In 1966, when he was 23 years old, he wanted to run for Congress, and he was talked out of it by his longtime, lifelong friend, a great guy who's no longer with us, Jim Tilton. And as Newt says, I said, well, what did Tilton say to you? And he said, he told me I had to go off and become an adult before I ran for Congress, so I went off and got a degree. He also made the point that if he had gotten elected in 66, he would have been too young to take the oath because he was only 23, so there were other reasons to listen to Jim. Five, comparison number five, and this is kind of eerie for those of you who like patterns and stuff. Newt and Bill both ran for Congress in 1974 for the first time. It was the first try for elected office. It was the year of Watergate. It was the year of gas going from 30 to 60 cents, high interest rates, high inflation. It was a very unstable environment. It was perfect for the temperament of these two. They came out of nowhere. They both ran against Southern incumbents, John P. Hammerschmidt in Arkansas in Clinton's case, and John J. Flint in Georgia, and they almost won. Clinton got 48%, and Newt got 49%. One was 31 at the time, one was 28. They were living out their fate at an early age, and the experiments occurred in the same time frame. Six, Clinton gets knocked for not being firm on principles, and Newt gets knocked for being a traditional conservative and maybe not caring about people. I think in this, what I'm about to say will contradict both of those. Both of these guys are, for lack of a better term, Southern racial progressives. They are firm on being anti-racist and knowing that we've got a serious problem in this country. To the extent that we're going to change affirmative action or transcend it somehow this year, next year, and the next 5 years, these two, by virtue of their background, by virtue of their friends, by virtue of their values, are ideally situated to do that. And if you're interested in racial progress after OJ and all this other nonsense, we got to look for these guys for some leadership. And I think it'll happen when the opportunity presents itself. Seven, previously been alluded to, they are both endless talkers. They think they can convince anybody of anything. And it's awesome, that level of intellectual self-confidence. A friend of mine said, can you imagine what we're going to have to go through if Newt is nominated and actually runs against Clinton? There's going to be 50 debates. I mean, okay. There are some differences, but I'll leave them off for now. So what does all this mean? It means that the system is working. And I can't believe I'm saying that, but the system really is working. If you're a third waiver, like Toffler, or if you're a fan of George Gilder's telecom, or if you're a bionomically inclined activist, or if you're a decentralizer and a deregulator and a free trader and an entitlements reformer, you have to be more or less satisfied with the direction of policy, given all of the garbage of the last 25 years. What's happening this year is great, and Bill Clinton is actually going to have the chance to leave the right legacy as president because of the Republican Congress. He never could have done what he's going to do with a Democrat Congress. Let's tick off some issues. Now, make the case why this trend is serious. Welfare reform. The bill's going to be signed. The gaps have been narrowed. The Senate passed a bill where 35 of the 47 Democrats voted to end the federal entitlement of welfare. That's astonishing. You couldn't have got that many Republicans to do that a year ago, but this year you have that many Democrats voting that way, and Clinton has said he'd sign a bill that's pretty much like the Senate bill. So I think that's a done deal. Deficit reduction. There's smoke and mirrors in both parties' deficit bills, and there's going to be lots and lots of brinksmanship and name-calling and stuff right up to November 15th. But in the end, they both have to deliver on this because the bond market and a lot of other things have sort of have assumed it, and neither one wants to be responsible for a stock market crash. Three, telecommunications bill. Congress passed a fairly good bill. Clinton has threatened to veto it. The threat's not going to be serious. The bill will be signed, and the stocks of Baby Bells and the long-distance companies are saying that the market already views that as a law. I think that's a done deal. Four, affirmative action. I think we'll have progress on that, on the racial issue generally, but I can't say when or how. I just have faith in these guys' backgrounds to produce it. Five, NAFTA, and GATT. If Clinton had not been a free trader, I could never have voted for him. If Bush had been reelected, we probably would not have had NAFTA. The Democrats would have voted as a bloc against it. They would have had the Congress, and Bush wouldn't have got it through. So Clinton, if you're a Republican, you've got to give Clinton credit for getting NAFTA and GATT through. Between them, Newt and Clinton can hold off the Luddites and the reactionaries in each of their coalition. Newt has to worry about Perot and Buchanan, and Clinton has to worry about Gephardt and Bonnier trying to turn back the clocks, you know, demonize Mexico and do all of this nonsense. That's a real threat to our prosperity as a hemisphere and as a people. And Clinton and Gingrich are safeguards against it. I don't know how Medicare is going to turn out, and I'm not sure how the tax issue is going to turn out in 96 and 97, so I will be agnostic about that, but I will say that we have progress on many of these key issues. The question will be asked, maybe John Fund feels this way, why do we have to go through all this? Why don't we just have a Republican president, even if it's Dole, who will at least sign most of the bills, and why do we have to have this fighting between the parties for 6 years to get most of what we could probably get anyway with a Republican president? That's a good question. At a pure policy level, what I'm saying probably is hard to accept. My response to that is there's no such thing as pure policy. This is a democracy, and the outs have to feel somehow that they're being heard. Through a Democratic president, the blacks, the labor unions, the feminists, the people who really aren't a part of our coalition, maybe someday they will be, but let's face it, they're not now, through an occasional veto, a modification, a federal regulation, a Supreme Court judgeship, will get just enough to not go off the deep end and not throw this country into serious ideological polarity. We've had times in this country where one party's had everything. We had it from 33 to 37, and then Lyndon Johnson had it again from 65 to 66. It's too much like absolute power, and it's too much going one way, and there's always a counter-reaction. And I would rather get our agenda carried out incrementally, half a loaf here, a third of a loaf there, loaf, over the next 6 years, and not have a big snapback reaction in 97 or 98. That's a strategic question, but, you know, I make a good case for it. Let me close with a vignette. There was another typical Washington dust-up this week, which people look at and say Washington is nuts, but it revealed a lot about the theme I'm offering you. In Dallas, President Clinton was meeting with, I guess, a group of high-dollar Republican types, and he wants to be liked, so he told them, he tried to say, look, you people in the room think I raised your taxes too much in 93, and this may surprise some of you, but I think I did too. If the Republicans had worked with me and had not stonewalled the budget process, we would have been able to get a better mix of taxes and spending, and I wouldn't have had to just work with the Democrats and get, you know, a high tax bill. If it had been anybody else but Newt the next day, if it had been Lugar or if it had been Reagan who were sort of providing the counter response, they would have said, well, I'm glad the president has seen the error of his ways and look forward to working with him. But Newt, because of this peas in the pod sibling rivalry thing, couldn't resist going ballistic at this. He got indignant. He said, President Clinton says he raised your taxes and it's our fault as Republicans. I have never seen anything so disgusting and blah, blah, blah. They're competing for the same niche. They both want to be seen as the friend of the entrepreneur, the friend of trade, the friend of the new paradigm, or the new covenant, as Clinton used to call it in 92. And to the extent they can compete on issues and manage their respective coalitions, jostling in that direction, I think most of us would agree that the system is going to produce good things. To the extent it gets too personal, too destructive, or that they ever go for the same office, all this goes up in smoke. Because peas in a pod, scorpions in the bottle, and siblings in a lifelong struggle. Politics is a lot of fun, and I hope you think the same. Thanks.